Hi, this is Farah Hirdoza from Jerry Pippin Radio Show, and right now we are at the second annual X Conference, Maryland Hilton Hotel. My guest is Alfred Weber from Institute for Cooperation in Space. Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Today you had your presentation, and it was wonderful. We were very much impressed, and I have many questions to you. But first of all, I would like to ask you, what is exopolitics?
Well, exopolitics is a model of the universe in which we live. It's a certain way of looking at it. And the dominant model of the 20th century was that all intelligent life ends at the geostationary orbit. That's the orbit that's 22,242 miles up, where you place a satellite at a fixed point on Earth. And what the 20th century model says is that there's no more intelligent life out beyond the geostationary orbit. And the exopolitics model is kind of the flip side of that. And it says that, well, we live in a populated universe, which is filled with intelligent, evolving civilizations, mediated under universe law, subject to universe governance forms, operating under universe politics, and we're an entry-level planet.
And you have serious studies and work about this project. Can you tell me about what you have been doing?
Well, what we've done, this is actually sort of the culmination of about 30 years' work, which includes the development in the mid-1970s of the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication. And then it includes work as a director of a proposed 1977 extraterrestrial communication project of the Jimmy Carter White House. Jimmy Carter himself had a UFO encounter in 1969. And then it includes the development of the work Exopolitics and of the Exopolitics model.
What is the universal law?
Well, universe law is the universe itself, like the Earth. We know from jurisprudence exists under natural law. If we look at our circumstances under law here on Earth, we can have many applied social laws, like criminal laws, laws that keep you from doing criminal acts, or family law, or contract law, any of these laws. But these social laws are based on what we call natural law. It's a fundamental force in the universe. For example, the principle of justice. Mm-hmm. You can't touch justice, but it's there as a force. And if justice exists on Earth, there's justice on the moon. Mm-hmm. The principle of justice exists on Mars. It exists on Alpha Centauri. It exists throughout the universe because it's a universal principle.
But is it a different kind of law, different than the Earth, or based on the same rules?
Well, it may vary from planetary system to planetary system in terms of the applied law. But the basic force of law and the basic concepts at the deepest level remain universal. And so the concepts of justice as a universal natural law principle that we feel on Earth are the same principles of justice that we would feel if we would be on a planet in Alpha Centauri.
And you said that Earth is an entry-level planet. What does it mean?
Yeah, it means that we are a planet that is just becoming aware. Our population of its entry into an organized populated universe. And we're what some scientists call a zero-level planet. And a one-level planet is a planet that kind of made it in. They know that we live in a populated universe, and their legal formal relations between it and other planetary systems and other and the universe governance systems. And we're just now entering. It's like a child who someday it gets to a certain age and it goes to pre-kindergarten. So it's entering pre-kindergarten. It's entering the educational system. We're about now to enter the organized planetary system.
When you talk about the extraterrestrial existence in the other planets in the universe, what is our methodology? Right now, how do we search them?
Well, one searchlight tool that has emerged over the last 30 years is the tool of scientific remote viewing, which was first developed at Stanford Research Institute with the research of Dr. Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ under contract with U.S. Defense Departments. And that was where they, under rigorous scientific methodology, they take the consciousness of a remote viewer from one location in space-time, and they access another location in space-time, and in ways that they can replicate, they bring back accurate information time after time after time as to what is at that space-time, what's in that file in Buenos Aires, Argentina. They can access it time after time after time. In the 1990s, there was a development called an evolution of remote viewing called scientific remote viewing with the same degree of replication in which the scientific remote viewer could access the consciousness of entities in other planetary civilizations and even representatives of universe governance authorities, and time after time begin a dialogue with them as to the nature of that universe civilization and as to the nature of that universe governance authority. So that's one scientific methodology in what they call subspace for developing the diplomatic communications and the initial communications with these off-planet cultures.
What is exactly remote viewing?
Well, what remote viewing is that the remote viewer who's highly trained mm-hmm. and follows a protocol mm-hmm. goes into what they call a subspace. In other words, we'll go outside of time and space and we'll locate another point in time and space, and then we'll view it and we'll report on it and bring it back. For example, if we instruct that person to go to a certain location in time and space, they will go to that location and they will report what's there as though they had a television camera mm-hmm. and actually report what's at the television camera, because they can transport their consciousness outside of time and space to that location in time and space, record what's there and bring it back. It's as though the mind extended that as a television camera to record it. And that was a protocol developed in the 1970s at Stanford Research Institute. In the 1990s, what happened is that through what they call scientific remote viewing, they developed the ability to take the consciousness and to take it to another inhabited planet, and to make to establish communication, like through television, with representatives of that planetary civilization, and to have a dialogue with them, and to record that dialogue like a transcript, and to bring that back.
To be a remote viewer, What is required, a gift or education?
Primarily training and education. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, what makes the scientific remote viewing a scientifically derived data is that it can be replicable. Time after time, if you conduct the experiment, which is the basis of the scientific method, you achieve the same results. And that's on the basis of training. And so, theoretically, it's a matter of rigorous training and following the scientific methods. Now, there may be some scientific remote viewers that are slightly better than others, and there's certain conditions that are set out that it's better not to engage in remote viewing if there are certain conditions in that person's life. But it's primarily a matter of following the protocols and being highly trained.
So, how many remote viewers are working in this project, trying to find out in which parts of the universe there are civilizations?
Well, there are a number of remote viewers who explore this area. The Star Dreams initiative as a project is now in the early stages. Mm-hmm. So what we are doing is we have taken the publicly available sources and designed the project plan based on the publicly available sources. And as the project moves forward, we will be taking on staff that, or, you know, hiring remote viewing consultants, or rather, we will be encouraging the governments of the world to go forward with this on an open and transparent basis.
Are you a remote viewer too?
No, I'm not. I'm a futurist.
Okay. As a futurist, are there any hopes for the human being on this planet?
I think that as a futurist, we know that there are alternative futures, mm-hmm. and we're capable of creating an alternative future. There's not an absolute future. Mm-hmm. And there are parties that want to create destructive futures, what I call ABC. Mm-hmm. The A future is the world ends in fire, the Armageddon future. The B is the world ends in ice, the global warming future, and there are parties that are creating that. We can intentionally create, as a society, a positive future, and that's the exopolitical future, by adopting the exopolitics platform and engaging in transparent education about our position in the universe and in diplomatic outreach and good faith negotiations and integration with spiritually advanced off-planet cultures that want to and have been authorized to integrate with us.
So when you speak about the possible variations of the future, this is in the global base. But what about the personal base? Are there future possibilities, different variations of the future possibilities for every person?
That's a very interesting question, and that's a matter of personal evolution. What we know is that when we come to significant historical plateaus, such as the period that Earth seems to be coming into, when we transition into conscious membership in universe society. Well, each individual will see that in their own individual way. And some individuals, it'll be a cause for transformation. Other individuals may take longer. Other individuals may find it reactive for a while. The whole process of having to give up a view that, gee, we're the only game in town to, oh, we're sharing the universe. If people find that a joyful experience, it's obviously much easier to go through. If they find it a fearful experience, well, it's a bit more difficult. So at the individual level, it really depends on kind of the evolutionary path of that individual soul.
But this is not only the biological evolution, it is also the spiritual evolution, isn't it?
Yes, very, very much so. And science is now, this is that rubric that people always say, oh, this is the era when science and spirituality come together. So we're beginning to confirm through science what the spiritual side of things have said, and that there's no difference, there's no separation ultimately between spirituality and science, so that our bodies, our physical bodies, are actually a continuum. We have our what looks like our biological bodies, and then we have different layers of auras going out and out and more and more. And now some people say that we're being genetically upgraded on the inside from a 3-strand DNA to a 12-strand DNA, and all of this is being happening from the inside, that universal forces are actually upgrading the human race to make it more capable of becoming universal citizens. As we speak, as we sleep, we're being upgraded from the inside. And that this is occurring kind of automatically. Now, the paradox is that we live in a free will universe, and that is one of the gifts of design of the universe. So ultimately, the individual may have free will to accept or to reject upgrades in consciousness, or genetics may choose to go into reaction and not accept this. Hopefully, as we have what some scientists call the morphogenic field, which is the kind of the field of consciousness, and as we approach more and more integration into universe society, and more of our fellow humans become conscious of the wider universe, there's a stronger and stronger morphogenic field, in other words, general field of consciousness put together, such that all of the human race then tends to upgrade together, because all of the fear-oriented stuff gets filtered out, because there's a stronger general positive field. That may be a process that's ongoing also. It's sort of the positive spiral effect.
And we are very worried about the abductions, alien abductions. There are people who are very happy about the abductions, because one group of abductees say that this is harmful, and another group says that, no, this is very useful and positive. But there is a certain interest from the ETs about human race, that's for sure. But what I think personally, human race, time to time, can be very cruel and harmful, as we can see the samples in our daily life. So why they are so interested in such a mixed human race? I mean, yes, there are beautiful things on the earth, but human race has a tendency to destroy the environment, the sea, the air, the animals, all these things. So why they are interested in us?
Good. Well, there are several questions embedded in your question. I'd like to address some of the sub-questions. Mm-hmm. First, with regard to abduction is the fact that we have negative and positive reports. There's a very strong evidentiary base that a certain, very certain segment of the so-called abductions are actually what they call MILAB. And these are false abductions, which are created as part of the information war against universe society by military intelligence agencies who disguise themselves as extraterrestrials using mind control technology and carry out a disinformation operation on, quote, abductees, such that, so as to demonize the extraterrestrials, because then the abductees, so-called abductees, come out of this experience and say, oh, they treated me horribly. The extraterrestrials are horrible. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole branch of military intelligence that has been created to carry out these false abductions, and the whole field is called MILAB, military abductions. And if you map the bad abductions, most of them take place clustered around military bases, because that's where they take place from. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the negative reports that you find in the literature from so-called abductees are actually reports from survivors of military intelligence, mm-hmm. false abductions. Okay. That's number one. I want to be very clear about that.
Okay.
That is part of the information war against the extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. Number two, going over to the second part, which is the actual general abductions by a general extraterrestrial force. Okay. There you will have both a positive and negative reports. Okay? And as to those, I'll share with you some of the information that has been derived from scientific remote viewing that may shed some of the perspective on this from the point of view of universe society. What some of the scientific remote viewing, particularly with the galactic governance authorities, has been is that at least some sectors of these so-called abductions have taken place under the authority of the universe governance authorities, which authorize a what are called the advanced grays. They kind of act like the this sector's galactic Red Cross. They go into emergency situations, and they were authorized on an emergency basis to gather up a complete genetic and DNA bank of all flora and fauna of this planet, almost like Noah's Ark, because it may be that there's huge environmental catastrophes coming upon this planet. And the purpose of this genetic bank, according to these scientific remote viewings, will be to be able to restock the planet after a period in which, excuse me, in which the emergencies have happened. Mm-hmm. So these abductions have been authorized from a higher point of view, mm-hmm. that realize that we humans have not done the best job possible here. It may be out of our control, but they needed to take a complete bank of all flora and fauna here, mm-hmm. In order to store it, in order to restock the planet, maybe 1,000 years down the road after we've gotten to the other side.
It's they are backing up the files.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's part of it. Secondly, there's a second component in which the universe authorities have said that it's been authorized to have a genetic upgrade of the human race, because the present human race has been genetically dysfunctional. You know, We've organized ourselves into a dysfunctional global family. We have 150 wars going on at any one time. We seem to be very uncooperative, even within our human families, our nations, our communities. We're just warring against each other, murdering each other. The amount of social dysfunction is very, very great. And so part of it is due to an order which has gone out, an authorization for a genetic upgrade, so that the and this has happened periodically over time, so that we're sort of getting a more advanced model that'll be more cooperative, because ultimately the planet does not belong to the human race. We're sort of like we're like stewards, and the planet is the universe commons.
I completely agree with you in this point. I mean, I completely agree with you in everything that you say, but we are very temporary on this planet. In fact, we are temporary inside of our physical body.
Yes.
We are not the owners of this physical body. We are not the owners of this planet. We only own our spiritual soul. This is what we own. And when everything is very temporary, we are, in general, trying to own illusions. But we cannot see the huge realities. I guess this is the imperfection of the human race, but hopefully it will be changed soon. And in your wonderful presentation, you talked about the Martians, Mars, and the underground civilization in Mars. So what's happening there?
Well, that's a very interesting possibility, and it may provide a way through this coming period. And it all evolves from the scientific remote viewing. So these are replicable that were results. If you go back time after time, you'll get roughly the same answers so far. And essentially, apparently, in some distant past, Mars suffered a natural ecological cataclysm, which Mars may have been very Earth-like, and had a civilization there. Mm-hmm. And the natural cataclysm blew away the surface of Mars, the atmosphere, and the surface, and left a denuded planet, and would have destroyed the civilization there, except that the galactic authorities authorized the advanced greys to come in for a rescue operation. And the advanced greys, they're about a million years in advance of us, so they've achieved the ability to travel throughout time as well as space. So they rescued the Martians, according to the remote viewing, and have brought them forward in time to the present time, to where they're about 150 years technologically in advance of Earth, and they live underground on Mars. And what the galactic authorities that can see both cultures have realized is that it might be very beneficial for both cultures there were an integration, if contact were authorized, so that there'd be a cross-cultural migration between the civilization on Mars and the civilization on Earth, because the Martians are very desirous of emigrating to Earth, because it's very difficult to live underground. And they are not a warlike culture. They are peaceful. Their main kind of modus operandi is secrecy. But their migration to us would greatly aid us, because they have high technology, both in terms of energy, and many of the spaceships that we see are in fact the Martians. At the same time, the Martians coming to us may have benefits if if all of this is true, because it would yield sort of compassionate humanitarianism among Earthlings to welcome a neighboring planet that is a survival of cataclysm that may be coming on us. Yeah, and it would get us out of our addiction to permanent war.
And is there any information about the general description of the Martians? How do they look?
Yes, we and the Martians are of the same genetic stock, and they look more or less like Andean Indians. And in fact, there are some Martian bases in South America.
So, can we say that, or is it possible that some of the South American ancient civilizations were founded by them, or there was some relationship between the ancient South American civilizations and the Martians?
There was a basis to say that from the literature that I've examined, certainly is not out of the question.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the name of Ingo Swann.
Yes.
He was always very popular in my native country, Turkey.
Oh.
This name was very important for us when we were studying parapsychology or spiritualism. So, what is his position right now, or in all this Star Project and everything?
Well, I think that I've met Ingo Swann early in the 1970s when he was involved in the Stanford Research Institute remote viewing experiments, and he was one of the original minds that developed and first suggested remote viewing. And now remote viewing has developed into a very powerful searchlight tool in the development of an understanding of what the social and political structures of universe society might be, and in developing communication outreach.
And also in your speech today, you mentioned about the dream interpretations.
Yes.
And between dream interpretations, is there any connection with the UFO sightings?
Well, what we said in the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication is that many individual UFO communications may be constructed like dreams, such that they are intentional multidimensional communications, which can be interpreted in the same way that we interpret dreams.
Mm-hmm. And what about your books?
Yes. What we've done is to publish a book called Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. Mm-hmm. And that is a treatise which sets out the exopolitics model. Mm-hmm. That book is available on the internet.
Yes.
And at universebooks.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, do you have other future book projects?
Yes, I do. I've been asked to publish a second book that details the story of the development of the 1977 White House extraterrestrial communication project and all of those developments in those crucial years in the 1970s.
Thank you very much for this wonderful interview. And I know that Jerry Pippen Radio Show listeners are going to enjoy everything that, all the information that you gave us. Thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.